Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang Podcast, episode 148. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with the lovely Tim Elliott.
It's a nice sunny day down here in Lakefield.
The debonair, Graham Thickens.
Was that Santa on base?
And the muscular, Phil Wilson.
Yeah, that's what I always say when I look in the mirror. Wow, yeah. What a muscular guy. Nice man boobs.
How you boys doing?
Just fine, thanks.
Good.
Tim, you probably ought to explain the Lakefield thing.
Yeah, so I sent Ann Tracy from Blandon on Broadband blog did this whole thing on fiber that went to what I thought was Lakeville. And I thought, oh, God, I'm going to send that to my Lakeville buddies, Tim and Phil. And then, Phil, you sent it back this morning and said, no, Lakefield. Read the blog, idiot.
So, I don't think I've ever been to Lakefield.
I don't even know where it is.
Lakefield is. I barely know where Lakeville is. What are you talking about?
Yeah, we should look it up on a map. But anyway, so, yeah, that was my I do that often with clients. I'll tell them something very important that has nothing to do with what they're interested in. No, I'm kidding. Hey, big news this week that SAP went after SuccessFactors, but they bought Jobs to Web, Doug Berg's company, for $110
million. Nice.
That is in cash. In cash.
Nice.
Yep. Congrats to Doug and team. Now, for those that don't know Doug Berg, I mean, he's done a lot of great stuff, including, you know, the StartupTechies.com, and he's been in the space for quite a while, and that's just, how great is that?
Yeah, it's just awesome. I remember sitting down with Doug in 2003 when he wanted to figure out what he wanted to name his new thing. You know, Techies had pretty well fizzled out by 01 or 02 after they missed the IPO window, right 2 weeks before the NASDAQ. They would have made it in about 2 weeks had the NASDAQ not crashed in March of 2000. But anyway, I remember him talking about getting a new thing going, and it was Hot Gigs originally.
Right.
And then they eventually morphed that name to Jobs to Web.
So when he was thinking of the name, he didn't like Graham Thickens' job company?
Well, what was going on at that time, there was a company called Hot Jobs.
Oh.
And I actually advised him, I don't think I'd go there, Doug, because wouldn't they rain all over you? That was a pretty up-and-coming company at that time, but I don't know that anything ever happened with that. I don't think they ever got a cease and desist. But several years later, it morphed into Jobs to Web, and Ken Hollick became the CEO and got a lot of venture money in there. I think I read where $7 million was invested in the company, so not a bad return those investors, too, who may have owned, 40, 50% of the company or more. Collectively, they probably did own more than that. And Ken Hollick, former CEO of Lawson, obviously had a good chunk as well.
Right.
But yeah, it's a big win for all of them. But Doug isn't going away. He told me on an email last night he's got a role ongoing with SuccessFactors and SAP, and he's really excited about the future. And so anyway, I invited him to the holiday bash next Wednesday at Coco that W3I is putting on, but he unfortunately can't make it. But
well, that's good too, because it's actually on Thursday.
Oh, Thursday the 15th. I'm sorry. I don't know why Wednesday's another event that we have to get on our list. He won't be able to make it to that, but he's obviously a big success story for the year.
Great. Well, things are heating up in retail land. I mean, I've been watching CNBC every morning, which I normally do. I'll usually flip it on in the morning, watch it for 45 minutes or an hour. And, they constantly are tracking retail reports. And I don't know who put this in the show discussion notes.
Oh, I'm sure
about
it was
the Amazon.
He's plugged in, baby.
He is, but the Amazon's going to pay shoppers $5 to walk out of stores empty-handed. What's that all about?
That broke earlier in the week, and that's interesting. I'm kind of curious to see what bearing that has on people's habits. Have you seen anything, Tim, as far as results of that campaign?
Well, it doesn't start until Saturday.
Oh, okay.
And you can go and do up to three. So a consumer can get up to $15 off on Amazon by scanning three different products at a physical store. So it's an interesting idea that obviously they want to get people to install their price check application on their phone.
Mm-hmm.
And then go to a retail store. Presumably they would already be shopping anyway. And snap barcodes comparing price.
You know, I find this interesting in as far as pitting Amazon against, brick and mortar stores. But I also find it interesting in the fact that this is the sort of thing that may actually push the QR code and the bar scanning into somewhat of a more mainstream accepted kind of a deal. I mean, I think QR codes are struggling a bit because they take so much to explain. But this gives that incentive to say, it's worth your time to put the app on your phone, and it's worth your time to scan it.
I don't need $5 that bad.
Yeah, but
at the mall anyway, might as well.
Yeah, right? And if you're going to get $15 off your next purchase at Amazon, sweet, why not?
Well, yeah. And I don't know how often you guys will go in and look to buy something, and you have to have it right at that moment. That waiting a day or waiting 2 days to receive it isn't going to be that big of a deal. And I will tell you, I've used Red Laser, the app, for quite some time where you can scan barcodes, and it will tell you where nearby you can buy the product or where you can buy it online and for what kind of money. And routinely, there are some products that I want. My kids and my wife asked me for a birthday and Christmas list, and I gave it to them. But I put links in for several of the items to Amazon because it's $40 or $50 less than you could buy it at retail locally here.
Yeah.
At a Best Buy or a Micro Center. And God love them, but I'm not going to give them $40 or $50 when I don't have to.
Well, I mean, that's the interesting thing is that I think that geeks like us are particularly susceptible to wanting it now. So it's tougher for us to wait on a new gadget or something like that, wait for it to come in the mail. I mean, it kind of harkens back to the days when you were waiting for something from Battle Creek, Michigan, because you were waiting for your prize from Kellogg's cereal. But I do think it's very interesting to see. I'm anxious to see what like a Target or a Best Buy will do to respond to that sort of a thing.
Well, so Tim, what are you seeing with social commerce? I'm reading a ton about that in terms of how companies are trying to figure out, where's the sweet spot between an influencer just influencing somebody and motivating to buy and somebody putting out a tweet, for example, saying, I'm going to buy a new microphone. What should I get? And then once everything comes in and the person makes the decision, they can buy it right there on the spot. Just pick the retailer they want to buy it from and just buy it. Mm-hmm. And are you seeing anything that's getting traction? Are you seeing anything that is working as a model for social commerce?
The Facebook platform seems to be the biggest, where most of the traction is currently. And I think that, that will continue. Folks at 8th Bridge kind of leading the charge a little bit there.
Yeah.
Other social networks like Twitter and Google Plus will probably also play a role in the not too distant future there too. But, generally, this recommendations on social networks are very influential to trigger purchases. So, the companies are going to really have to figure that out. And I'm not sure where that leaves companies, brick and mortar companies like Best Buy and Target.
Well, that's a good question because it's, there's no reason that they can't play in the game too.
Well, there's certain products that you just have to go and get physically. Groceries, probably the best example of that. But a lot of stuff, especially the stuff that Best Buy sells, if you can wait a day or two, you can probably get it for less on Amazon and not pay tax
which, you know, on a large purchase, that's going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
Compete with what Amazon's trying to do is going to be very difficult.
Yeah. Is that you, Tim, breaking up, or is that somebody else? Phil?
Because it wasn't me.
might be me.
No? Phil, are you still there?
Yes, I am still here. My apologies. I was muting. I was having a coughing attack. Sorry.
Okay.
No, there's just I didn't want to share that with everybody.
Some weird Graham, Skype pickup.
You were going to say something there, too. I mean, you were going to... Did you have a comment, Graham? I'm sorry. Now, did we lose Graham? No.
Yeah,
no,
I'm sorry. I thought I was unmuted.
No.
Yeah, I have a comment on social commerce. I was talking with Michael Gorman about this, and of course, they're an investor in 8th Bridge, but he brought up a point that made me think about women and social commerce. Women tend to go shopping together a lot. I don't think guys do that. Do you have, Steve, do you ever call up the guys and say, hey, let's go down to, you know, Micro Center and look at, you know.
I hate to say it. Yes, never. Did call me on that one.
Never go shopping with guys, you know. But women are really into the social aspect of commerce. So, and of course, aren't women don't women outnumber men on Facebook by quite, or at least active users? So, you know, that's one thought. Another thought, when you brought up Target and Best Buy, did you see where Target got ranked the best of the major retailers in social?
You're kidding.
No, their web doesn't work, but by God, they're the best in social.
Well, but they don't blog. They don't do it. I mean, they don't do anything. They've got some goofy gal.
Yeah, it kind of came out of left field, and like, Best Buy was like fourth.
No.
And Amazon might have been two on the strength of their reviews. But how does Target rank?
Well, Target's been doing some really interesting things on Facebook. But yeah, I would say that across the board, I don't think of them as being a huge social media kind of powerhouse.
I'll find that link. I didn't recognize the outfit that did the study, but it was on shop.org, I believe. I'll find it.
Wow.
Interesting. You know, now, of course, now seeing this rumor that's popped up yet again that Amazon might open their own stores and actually be in brick and mortar, would you actually be able to go into Amazon, scan an Amazon, and get $5 to buy something from Amazon if you were in the Amazon store?
That's kind of recursive. I don't think so.
It just kind of keeps going and going, doesn't it?
Yeah. That's troubling. I think that's just a crazy rumor. I can't imagine Amazon doing anything more than, well, I mean, the Calacanis rumor is that they're going to do Costco style, you know, warehouse stores with a lot of their products. I could see Amazon doing some kiosks, especially in like transit centers, like airports, like Bose has. I could see that with maybe Kindles there and if they do a phone, they could do phones and maybe other gadgets. I could see that. But, for you know, to have a brick-and-mortar presence across the country like a Costco or a Walmart or a Target, I mean, I think it's crazy. That's a totally different business.
Well, you know, maybe there's this possibility of actually using some of their regional centers, you know, warehousing centers, and maybe opening a small section of it that is, you know, sort of warehouse shopping. But because, I mean, they do have brick and mortar locations around the country. So it might be, you know, because they've got the fulfillment issues they've got to deal with. So
I'm sure it'll be big in Memphis because they're right on the airport in Memphis. Right next to FedEx.
I thought Jason Calacanis was saying more like they'd have small stores where they wouldn't have much stock in there, but you could go in there and see it and order it and get it the next day, especially, or in two days if you're on the free shipping Prime thing. I thought that's what he was saying, but...
Well, I think the recognition is that there are certain products that you have to touch and experience. And I would put tablets in that category. There was a guy I was listening to yesterday or last night at Costco who was standing in front of a Vizio Android tablet that Costco is selling for, I think, $187. And it's got a little camera in it and so on. And it wasn't on. And he was bugging some guy. He said, hey, can you turn this thing on? And the guy goes, yeah, people keep unplugging it and it's not charging. And so they plugged it in and he fired it up. And the guy was, trying it out and so on. He said, do you have any others that I can try? And he said, no. And he said, okay. He puts it down and walks away. And so later, I'm standing back by another aisle and I hear this guy talking to his wife saying, you know, I can't choose from a universe of one. And I thought that was a really interesting observation because, when you walk into a Best Buy, they've got 27 tablets and you can try every one of them and they're all working and most of them are connected to the net. And it's a much different paradigm. So if you're in a space, if you know you want a Dyson vacuum and it's the model Dweebazar, you can buy it anywhere. I mean, once you're out there with it. But if it's a new category or if it's a complex product, you've got to touch it and feel it. And I'm sure that Amazon is feeling the return problem with some of these more complex products where people are getting them and they're trying them. And because they have such a liberal return policy, they just ship it back.
Yeah, like Graham here with his Kindle Fire.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you returned it?
Was that a segue into my...
No, but did you return yours?
You don't follow Graham's Posterous blog? I mean, you find out the most interesting things over there.
That was the first longer post I put on Posterous for other than photos for a long time. I don't know why I did it there. I just thought I should probably blog there. But yeah, I thought I'd try it, and I was pretty disappointed with mostly the hardware aspect of it, but it really came down to do I really need this thing? I mean, do I really need to have an Android device or another iPad? And I decided, you know what, I could spend that $200 on the iPad 3 when it comes in, hopefully March, April, May, I don't know. So yeah, I the net on my Posterous piece was that I didn't like the hardware aspect, that I didn't like how the power connector was at the bottom and it only has that one button. And, I thought the thing kept crashing on me. You know what I finally figured out it was?
You were shutting it off.
I think you accidentally hit that button, you shut it off. And it's like the button's in a weird place. And the power connector was loose and wiggly. And I thought, man, this hardware, and it's heavy. That was the other thing that really got me.
Well, and the good news is about this? That's freed up $200 for you to buy me a present.
There you go. So. Let's go social shopping. Meet you at Best Buy in half an hour.
Yeah. Let's go to Nordstrom and get some clothing.
Oh,
what do you think?
I can't handle their prices. TJ Maxx, maybe.
Yeah. Well, hey, our frequent guest host, Julio Ojeda Zapata, is available, and I'd like to bring him on now. What do you guys think?
Sounds good. We were talking about shopping and gadgets, and hey, I have an idea that Julio has some insight as to holiday gadgets and things like
Julio?
That.
Julio? Hello.
How are you, pal?
I'm excellent. Thank you.
So we're debating whether or not you know anything about gadgets and anything that might be germane for holiday shoppers.
Damn, I wish you had told me. I would have prepared.
Yeah. You live, eat, breathe, and sleep that stuff, pal.
Yeah.
All right. What's the top holiday gadget, Julio?
If you ask me, personally, what I would crave above all else as a holiday gadget, definitely the MacBook Air definitely.
Yes. Which one? 11, 13.
Well, that's a good question. A lot of people are enamored with the 11-inch form factor. I find that a little limiting, a little claustrophobic. The 13 hits the sweet spot for me. When I've played with a loaner from Apple to review, I found that to be absolutely perfect. And I never used to be a laptop guy, to be honest. I've always been happy, working on a desktop iMac, which is what I'm on right now here in my home office. That's always been my thing. And the latest generation MacBook Air is the first laptop that flipped a switch in my head and suddenly made me realize that you could be happy, comfortable, productive, for an entire day on a laptop in a laptop environment, and I've never looked back.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Now, do you do anything that's horsepower intensive? I look at the fact that that I'm doing screencasts and now, you know, recording this podcast, and I do a lot of video stuff, and I need a lot of storage and a lot of horsepower. And that's the only thing that's holding me back on using an Air as a primary machine, even though with Thunderbolt, you know, there's now Thunderbolt drives out and there's a bigger display. But I look at, you know, a single i5 or i7 processor in a MacBook Air, you know, would there be enough horsepower there?
That's a very good question. I dabble with video editing a little bit. I create some video content from time to time for my job. It's not like heavy duty video editing. You know, the projects aren't huge, and given those parameters, I have found the Air to be more than sufficient. The solid state storage really peps things up. In fact, I heard a Mac World editor say he used to do his video editing on his iMac, and he can't stand it anymore because doing it on the Air is so much faster. And I agree with that. I don't think that guy and you are in the same category. I think you do some much more ambitious stuff, and I can see where for you there might begin to feel limiting, but it doesn't for me because I work on a relatively simple video projects that are more than the hardware is more than sufficient for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you think are the top three hottest gadgets for this holiday season?
Beyond the Mac Air, obviously.
Yeah, beyond that.
Yeah. One category that I find extremely interesting is our speaker add-on speaker devices for iOS gadgets.
Yes, yes.
And that product is getting that category is getting very interesting in a number of ways. If you have a few bucks to throw around, AirPlay devices are coming on the market. I've been playing with the I think it's called the IW1. It's a very bad product name, but it's from iHome, and it's this very minimalist black curvy thing that's sitting on your bookshelf or whatever, and with Apple's AirPlay technology, you know, having an iOS device link up to it is, you know, it's trivial. There's no Bluetooth pairing involved, and so AirPlay, you know, if you AirPlay gets makes you spend a little more money, but it's massively convenient if you're using an iPad, an iPhone, iPod Touch. On the other hand, Bluetooth is, you know, remains a very viable approach, and Logitech is releasing a lot of really, really nice. They have a wireless boombox, which has three speakers in a compact, relatively portable unit that sounds insanely good. And they release, I'm not sure I'm getting the product name right, but it's a mini boombox. It's basically this little thing that you can sort of hold in your hand and you can carry with you around the house. Like I've been using it while I do the dishes. I just put it up on the windowsill over to the sink. It's a Bluetooth speaker, and for such a small device, it sounds really, really nice. It sounds very, very good. The audio is very, very satisfying.
And what's that called?
I'm gonna have to look it up here. I think it's okay. Called the mini boombox. But it's basically just this tiny little speaker, and it has the added benefit of speakerphone capability. So you can in a work environment, hypothetically, you can use it as a speakerphone for phone conferences. So I'm just kind of scratching the surface. This is kind of one really rocking category. Logitech Mini Boombox, that's what it's called. This is one of those, just $100. It's one of these categories that are very interesting because there are so many choices out there.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a good looking little unit, though. That's very cool.
Yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes.
And yeah. That's Bluetooth?
Yeah, the Logitech wireless boombox and the Logitech mini boombox are Bluetooth, and once you've paired your iOS device, you know, reconnecting with it is relatively trivial. It's not as slick as AirPlay, but AirPlay gets you into a higher price bracket. That's the only problem.
Right. But you could also take this across other platforms besides iOS, since it's Bluetooth, right?
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. If you're going to do AirPlay, that restricts you pretty much to the Apple universe. If Bluetooth is more universal, you can use it with an Android phone. iHome, the company that makes the AirPlay device that I just mentioned, they're teasing, you know, they're getting ready for CES and they're putting out some tease type information about how they're going to embrace Android. And I don't know what exactly they're going to do there, but apparently they're very hot about supporting the Android platform with the same vigor that they've supported the Apple platform in the past. And I don't know exactly how they're going to do that, but it's going to be interesting because they're going to be totally behind Android at some point. The other product category that has been a little interesting to me is the whole apparel angle, sort of the gadget apparel angle. I've been playing with the puffer jacket from Scotty Vest. I'm sure you guys are familiar with Scotty Vest.
Oh yeah,
sure.
Yeah, and they came out with a. I guess it's. I'm not much of a stylish guy, but apparently.
Oh, don't sell yourself short. You are a GQ sort of fella.
But apparently, if you put puffer jacket into Google, you come up with all these, you know, these swinging apparel options that I had never I had never known existed. But
these swinging apparel.
But apparently, they came out with a you know, classic looking puffer jacket with the Scotty Vest enhancement, which with all the, you know, the inner pocket. Apparently, it has 19 pockets, including one big enough for an iPad if you want to stick that in there. The whole Scotty Vest angle is if you're an air traveler, you can put all your stuff in your jacket, and then when you go through security, you just take your jacket off, run the whole thing through security, and, you know, it's easy peasy. But my problem with Scotty Vest in the past has been they've been a little uneven on the quality front. Like one fleece pullover thing they sent me, the elastic bands around the wrist were so tight they cut off my circulation. The style of, you know, the styling of some of their garments, like they have a heavy Winter Revolution Plus jacket that it's warm and has lots of pockets, but you look like grandpa in it.
Well, you know what, Julio, before we went over to Europe,
yeah,
I was looking at one of these. It looks like a photographer's vest. You can put gadgets in there.
Uh-huh.
And I was telling my kids, showing my daughter especially, I go, so what do you think of this? I could put my iPad in there. She goes, Dad,
I don't want to
you would look like a serious dork. Do not do that.
I feel for your kid because I agree. But the puffer jacket is nice. It's it looks super stylish.
It comes in red and black.
Red and black. It looks cool.
And it would look good with your white patent leather shoes, Julio.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
there's a brightly colored Lola version for women, which is similar. But the puffer jacket, it has a loose feeling fit, which is very comfortable. You can wear it with a light sweater underneath, but it looks, you know, snug. If someone's looking at you, it looks like it has a nice fit, and it's just excuse me, I have something in my throat here, but it's just a very nice looking jacket with all the Scotty Vest functionality, and so. So I'm bullish on Scotty Vest again because they finally came out with a product that is well made, looks nice, and has all the usual Scotty Vest enhancements.
Julio, are you sporting one of these right now? Or are you trying?
Yeah,
one of these
they sent me one to try out.
Let me ask you: are you really packing your iPad?
I think that's people who do that. I think that's a little silly. I think that's a little. I did the proof of concept. I stuck an iPad in there and said, yep, it fits in there. I'm done.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't do that, necessarily. And I hope people don't make the mistake. There's a big pocket in the back. I hope people don't make the mistake of sticking their iPad in there because they might sit on it and break it. That pocket in the back apparently is for newspapers or whatever.
Yeah.
But
newspapers have been relegated to the back.
Exactly. But I really like this jacket a whole lot. And I've been really recommending it. I have a lot of friends who just buy Scotty Vest like crazy, and I'm telling them, yeah, definitely get this.
Well, here's what's cool. I think you're tapping into a big trend with tech apparel because there's a technology called graphene, which is a one atom thick sheet. Basically, and it's extremely strong, and there's all kinds of different applications for it, but it conducts And so companies are looking at it for, you know, LED-based lit-up fabrics. They're looking at it for electronic transmission, you know, things like that. So I could eventually see, and in fact, somebody's got a proof of concept of a jacket that's a speaker
using graphene. Yeah. Interesting.
And so the jacket actually vibrates and acts as a speaker, so you can walk around, you know, like we really need that, right? We got cars driving down with boom boxes, subwoofers, and now we need somebody with a jacket doing that. But I think that not only is a trend this holiday season, but it's going to be an ongoing one.
Yep. Yeah, that Scotty vest is $190. It has 19 pockets for the men, and obviously women seem to need less because they only have 16 pockets in the Lola version. So,
yeah, there you go. They're not as gadgety.
Not as gadgety, yeah. I guess.
Yeah, I mean, Scotty vest gives you way more pockets than you'll ever use. That's the thing.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, yeah. So what else is hot, Julio? What else are you digging?
Well, last Sunday, I did a column where I ran down the big categories: ebook readers, tablet computers, laptops. I mentioned the MacBook Air already. On the phone front, I like the Galaxy S2 if you're not getting into an iPhone and if you're not on Verizon, because that's the only carrier that doesn't carry that phone. The Galaxy S2 is a really, really sweet phone. I mean, it's my favorite Android phone by far. I've been warning people away from the Kindle Fire a little bit because I don't think the thing is fully baked.
Did you return yours too?
I got a loaner from Amazon that I got sick of, so I just lent it to a coworker who's playing with it now. On the ebook reader front, I'm strongly urging people to go Kindle versus any of the other versions, because the Kindle line is the one that makes it the easiest to check out ebooks from the St. Paul Public Library or other library systems in the Twin Cities. Oh. You can do that with all ebook readers, but it's easiest to do that with the Kindle, because all your ebook reader loans are routed through the same WhisperSync avenue that your book purchases are. So they just pop up magically on your device once you've checked them out electronically. With other ebook readers, you have to sideload. You have to download the file to your computer and transfer it over via cable over to your ebook reader, which is a huge hassle. You don't have to do that on the Kindle. So if you want to get a lot of reading for free and get it onto your device as easily as possible, you know, Kindle is the only way to go.
I was going to say, do you like that $79 entry model, or should people get the Touch model, which I think is what, $99?
That's a very good question. I'm not sold on the Touch stuff. I don't think it's a must, and in fact, I don't like it enough to be willing to spend the extra money. If I were going to buy an ebook reader, I would just get the cheap one with the buttons. I thought initially when they came out with the new version, I looked at the pictures and I thought initially the only buttons they had were on the little rocker at the bottom. And that's actually not the case. They still have the buttons along the left and right edges. And that sells me on the device. I would rather just click those buttons as I'm reading than having to slide my finger along the screen. The infrared touch technology isn't, true touch. There are little readers sort of built into the side that sort of sense the presence of your finger. So it's not actual touch. It's not actual technology in the iPad sense. It's sort of a hack, and it doesn't work as well as it should. And I don't like it, frankly. I'm not willing to spend $20 or $30 extra dollars for that. I'd rather just, get the cheap $79 non-touch Kindle with ads thing and call it a day. I think that's just fine. And then on the laptop front, if you're not going MacBook Air, I've been suggesting people take a look at the Dell XPS 14Z. Are you guys still there?
Yeah. Of course we're here. Yeah, we're listening intently.
Yeah, the 14Z, very, very sexy Dell laptop. It's not an Air equivalent. It's more of a MacBook Pro equivalent. It's the rough equivalent of the 13-inch MacBook Pro. What Dell has done with this laptop is create something that is in many ways as elegantly designed, as beautiful, and as easy and fun to use as the MacBook Pro line, but they to their credit, they haven't been copycats. They haven't mimicked the MacBook Pro line. These laptops have a styling all their own. The keys are completely different. They're sort of rounded and contoured, yet very easy to use, and they're backlit. They have sort of decorative cutouts in the body, which sort of mimic the decorative vents on the decorative covers on the heating vents in my house. In terms of styling, there's a blog post I put up about that. In terms of styling, they're very nice. They're very fast. The screens are beautiful. There's a 15Z version. If 14-inch screen is a little too small for you. So I've been very happy with these laptops. These are the first Dell computers that I've seen in many years, because for some reason I don't know what happened. I might have gotten on Dell's shit list or something, because for years they would never send me anything for review. And then all of a sudden, magically, I sort of got back into their good graces and they started sending me systems again. And this is the first one that I received, and I really like it a lot. And then there's the whole Ultrabook category, which are Windows laptops that are intended to compete directly with the MacBook Air. And Acer sent me their Aspire S3. And that's an interesting option. On the one hand, it's not as nice as the MacBook Air. The materials aren't as fancy. The screen isn't quite as nice. They cut a few corners. But on the other hand, great keyboard. Really comfortable to use and much cheaper than the MacBook Air. So you're getting a MacBook Air-like computer that isn't quite up to snuff on the industrial design and, all the fancy materials and so forth. But isn't as expensive either. So all things considered, it's a relatively good thing to consider. So,
What's interesting again with Costco is they had an Acer that looked just like a 13-inch Air, and it was $899. And I didn't have a lot of time to check it out, but there were a lot of people looking at that Ultrabook.
That's probably the same one that I'm talking about.
Probably, yeah.
If you go to the Microsoft retail store at the Mall of America, the one that's directly across from the Apple store, they're pushing that Aspire S3 really hard. They have like a whole bunch of them lined up on a table. Mm. And it's a nice option. There's an Asus MacBook Air clone, which if you don't look at it carefully enough, you'll swear it's a MacBook Air because it has the same types of materials. It looks almost exactly the same. Very sexy looking machine, but the trackpad is a little is not quite right. The usability of it apparently has been compromised a little bit, and it's very expensive. Sort of MacBook Air expensive. And I tell people if you're gonna choose between the Asus and the MacBook Air, definitely go to the MacBook Air. The Asus is trying to copy the MacBook Air directly, but they haven't really quite pulled it off. So,
I would love for Apple to come out with something just horrible and ugly. And then see if everyone follows it.
Kind of a joke. Yeah.
I look back on that clamshell thing they had a while back. That was pretty ugly. So, but they had a deal in the Onion a while back. That it was like a organic computer living and breathing. It was funny. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, look it up. That'd be great. Yeah. Well, let's quickly talk about two quick observations. Julio, at the beginning of the summer, we were talking about how the typical summers in the past few years that we've done this podcast, have been relatively quiet. In fact, there were some summers where we're like, what the hell are we going to talk about this week? Nothing happened. This summer was totally different. It was the exponential acceleration in stuff that's going on, especially in the mobile space, was just amazing. And typically, the fall selling season has always been one where everything's been locked down in October because you don't want to disrupt people who are trying to make a decision on what to buy or what to ask for. And usually things are pretty quiet until January and then they start to heat up again. This fall selling season is totally different. And what's really interesting is how the online space, especially with social apps, is changing pretty dramatically. And there's been a bunch of stuff that's come out this week specifically that you kind of have been tracking, haven't you, Julio?
Yeah, a little bit. I think one of the reasons that it's happening this specific week is because La Web is happening in Paris, and I think some of the announcements were specifically tied to that. Mm-hmm. But your overall point is well taken, that there don't seem to be any down periods anymore. All of this stuff is just accelerating and evolving constantly and at light speed. So yeah, but this week has been kind of a blockbuster with Twitter. Like, Twitter overhauled, you know, their entire product line, their iOS and Android apps, excluding the iPad app apparently, but that's coming soon. They kicked out native apps for Mac and for Windows. They didn't used to have a native Windows app. They overhauled their TweetDeck web app, which the web version of TweetDeck used to be only on Chrome, and they used to have an Air-based version for Mac and PC. So they got rid of all the Air stuff. They overhauled the Chrome web app, and they made that compatible with Safari as well. And I was a big fan of TweetDeck on Chrome, and now I can use it on Safari too, which is really nice. And then they completely revamped the appearance. So they've done some nice interface enhancements, and so I'm pretty happy with it. Although I got into an argument with Dwight Silverman, my counterpart at the Houston Chronicle. I was telling him, Dwight, the native app that you download on the Mac and the web app you fire up in a browser, they look exactly the same. So this quote unquote native app must just be a web wrapper, because you know. They look exactly the same. And he was like, no, it really is a native app. And, you know, we got into a big argument on that on Twitter, so we'll have to agree to disagree on that. But what Twitter has done with its web stuff, the stuff that you look on a desktop computer, is very nice. I'm not as happy with what they've done with their mobile app. I think they've basically kind of wrecked it. It's become unusable for me. I didn't use it very much anyway, but I'm more of a Tweetbot guy, but it's... I think they've made some serious design mistakes, and the app isn't as easy to use as it used to be. So,
you know, it's funny because when I opened it up for the first time this morning, the new app on the iPhone, I had that same reaction. But here's the number one faux pas in my estimation, is there's no visual reference as to what account you're in.
Exactly.
So I manage multiple accounts, but they all look the same. So I could see myself easily tweeting from the wrong account. So, you know, even having something color-coded so that you would know, oh, yes, I'm in the red account, which is, you know, this one, and the blue account, which is Minovate, and so forth, would really help to minimize that. But, yeah, it is – I suppose it's like anything else, though. You really got to take time to kind of get into it. And
switching from one account to the other is awkward.
It is awkward. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Tweetbot. I worship at the altar of Tweetbot. I think that's the ultimate Twitter app on any mobile device. And I'm hoping that they'll create an iPad version at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's go around the horn. Julio, you know, you want a MacBook Air 13 inch for the holidays.
Yes,
Graham,
please.
Graham, what would be your pick? What would you like?
Well, I already bought my toys. You know, I bought the Fire, Kindle Fire, and I returned it. I bought the Jawbone Up, which I like. But I was delighted to see that they're going to give us our money back, and we can keep the device. Well, so there's another $99 back to me, baby.
Did it not work? What happened?
No, it worked fine for me, but apparently enough people complained that the CEO was feeling really contrite, and he said, you know, it's almost like he's begging the market's forgiveness, and he's going to give everybody their money back. It's the craziest thing. In fact,
so what is the Up, dude?
The Up is a wristband.
Wristband. That's right.
Activity monitor. Activity and health monitor. $99.95 at Best Buy or wherever. And you use it with a free iPhone app, which, you know, graphs your activity and your sleep and what you eat and stuff like that. It's kind of cool. A bunch of us were out there getting them the first day they were available. So anyway, that I put the link in the show notes, that it's crazy. You could go buy one right now if you can find one, and you could get your $99 and have the device for free.
Wow.
So there's a tip for people. And the other thing that I've already bought for myself, see, I'm not waiting on you guys. I'm going out and buying my own presents.
Good, because you'd be waiting a long time.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
I know you guys. I know how cheap you are. Anyway, I got the iPhone 4S telephoto lens, which I found in the Southwest Airlines in-flight mag when I went to Denver. And for $35, you get this goofy-looking lens, which fits on a case. So you get a case and a little lens. And you get a tripod with the deal, too. It's not the greatest. It's nothing more than like a magnifier, you know. But it looks cool. You know, you can impress your friends that you have like this expensive telephoto lens on your iPhone 4S.
Cool.
So I'll find that link. It's from Photo Jojo. You must know them, Julio.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's an interesting, another interesting category of photographic attachments for the iPhone. There are quite a few products like that. There's this Kickstarter project that consists of this little thing where you can slide your phone in, and there's this big red button that serves as a shutter. I forget what its name, but I'm really sorry, I'm blanking out on the names of these products, but there's this one very simple attachment that sort of fits onto the iPhone and allows it to sort of stand up in various positions, and you can also screw it onto a tripod.
Yeah, huh.
Well, what I loved was you've seen those shoulder mounts for digital SLR cameras, so you can turn it into a big camcorder, so it's nice and stable. I saw one for the iPhone. You know, the rig was about 30 times bigger than the iPhone, and I thought, wait a minute. I mean, if you've got to go to all that trouble to take decent video with the iPhone, I mean, why not go buy a good camera?
Yeah, go buy a GoPro something.
Oh, my God. Yeah, which, by the way, Best Buy is carrying now, the GoPro, the helmet cam.
Yeah.
So now that...
Those are awesome.
Yeah.
Did I ever show you guys my friend Ryan Payton's GoPro on his surfboard up on Lake Superior last January? It's a pretty cool video he just threw together in iMovie. Yeah.
We'll send it. Yeah, send it
out.
Yeah,
I'll give you the link.
So,
yeah.
Phil, what do you want?
I guess I'm with Julio. I'd go with the MacBook Air.
Okay.
I think that from a gadget standpoint, the new Galaxy S would be nice too, as far as an Android device goes. But I'm still kind of wondering about, you know, making the jump to the iPhone now that Sprint's carrying it. I haven't jumped on the S, but the 4S, but that's something. You know, really, I'm pretty much set for gadgets. I do like that that Logitech mini boombox. That's kind of a cool idea. So that's fairly inexpensive, Steve. You guys could go together. It'd only be about $33 a piece. and that would be all right. I've already done the math for you guys.
Tim, how about you, pal?
I think I'm going to get an iPad.
All right.
After waiting out the tablets for all this time and looking at what's happening with Android, I just don't see Android doing much that isn't a trade-off like the Fire is. So, yeah, so I think I'll just break down, although I may wait until after the holidays to see if they're going to announce the 3.
I was going to say, Tim, I use the iPad 1, and it's just fine, and I'm convinced that's going to go to maybe as low as $199 when the iPad 3 comes out.
Really? Because they're not selling the 1s anymore, are they?
I thought they were. Or did they didn't drop them completely, did they?
Yeah, you
You get refurbs, but they're $400 or $300 or something like that when they're available.
Well, they could keep manufacturing them. I mean, there's a supply chain out there, you know. I can't imagine they won't come out with a cheaper version.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder why they keep the iPhone hanging around. So they have the 3GS still out there, the 4 still out there.
Right.
Yet the iPad, they didn't do that same kind of thing. I wonder if there's a economy of scale problem with the iPad.
Well, that could be.
I think Apple is just pushing the premium angle, but they're going to probably stop now that the Kindle Fire is giving them serious competition, and they're probably going to switch gears. and sort of keep the older iPad models around at a lower cost to compete with the more affordable Fire, and then come out with a new model at premium pricing. So they're going to have to. They haven't had to respond to tablet competitors because they've all been hopeless, but they will have to do something along those lines with the Kindle Fire because that's the first viable competitor to the iPad.
Well, and there was one analyst who had come out talking about to the supply chain question about keeping the iPad 2 around in its current state with its current screen because the iPad 3 will have a completely different screen and you know different internals for the most part, and that way you could take advantage of all the production capability that exists to build the new one, while at the same time keeping the lines rolling on the old one and lower the price, so you have a different entry point. So, yep, but for me, and probably everyone will have to get together on this one. But a
social shopping?
No, a Gulfstream G650 business jet. Seats 8, base price of $58 million. The leather would be fine. I'll do the leather. And, no, in all seriousness, all I really am interested in is a Blue Yeti microphone.
You've been asking for that for a year.
Yeah, well, it hasn't been a big imperative, but when we did the podcast down at Coco, and I had the little portable Olympus like you and I have, Graham, I really had to work hard at boosting the signal and boosting the audio, and I realized that if I just had the Blue Yeti and I had it plugged into my MacBook Air, we could have just recorded directly with that, and it would have just been a piece of cake. So,
if you got that, it would benefit all of us.
Yeah.
The Blue mics, the line is fantastic. My pal Patrick Roan, who does the local Minimal Mac podcast, he does the podcast with a buddy across the pond, Mike Hurley in London, and they use the Yeti, and the sound quality on that podcast is first rate.
Yeah. Yeah, they're great. They're great products. I recommend them to all my clients who are doing screencasts, things of that nature. And are you guys hearing a weird echo?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yes. It's just coming and going. It's just bizarre. Anyway, the NSA is probably listening in. They want to hear what's gonna be released before we ship the show. Hey, let's quickly end with upcoming events. Today at Coco is Gadgets and Gifts for Geeks and Grandmas.
Yep.
From 11:30 to 1. And then
is that in Minneapolis or in St. Paul?
The Minneapolis one. Okay. Yeah. And
the one with the expensive parking.
Yeah. But hey, if you get there early, it's only $6.25 for the whole day.
There you go. Well, I better leave 9. Now.
Well, it's too. Yeah, you get 2 minutes to get there to get the price. And then is anybody going to go to that Ties Edutech conference?
I'm not going to be able to.
Okay. That should be really fascinating. I'm going to see if I can squeak out and go to some of that, at least to walk the trade show floor. If you guys remember the MEC conference, the Minnesota Educational Computing Consortium, that became a corporation, that did Oregon Trail. They were one of the first to do Apple II software, and they were the tech company in the nation for educational software for quite some time. They used to do a big event at the Hyatt. That was an edutech-oriented event, and then they kind of went away. So looks like Ties is definitely picking up on that, and that's fabulous. And then on the 21st at Coco, Minneapolis, how to leverage digital media to build your business and raise capital from 9:30 to 11:30. But it's free to members of Coco and members of the Entrepreneurs Organization, but it's $500 for the general public. Yikes.
Who's behind that one, Steve?
The Entrepreneurs Organization. And Coco. Yeah.
That's Coco's own event?
No, they're just, by making the facility available, then they're considered to be a partner or a sponsor.
Yeah. Yeah, we have to remember our couple of good holiday events next week.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we've got one at Coco, and we've got another one the day before that MEMA does every year. Right. The MEMA holiday event is at the Institute of Arts on Wednesday the 14th, I believe at 6 p.m., and that's open to all members and non-members. There's a small fee. And then Thursday night the 15th is the first annual Tech Holiday Bash sponsored by W3I, which is going to be a lot of fun. I think they're capping it, having to cap it at 200, but I think there might still be a few seats left if you go to Eventbrite. And they're doing awards. And you guys don't know it yet, but I agreed that we would present the awards.
Oh, okay.
Really?
So that'll be a lot of fun. They're taking nominations for the best startup or app, whether it's a project or a startup. They're taking nominations. It can be a web app, a social app, a mobile app, whatever. So hit that Eventbrite site, and you'll see the link for nominations. And Rob Weber said it'd be fun to have the Minovate guys do the presenting. So
oh, that'd be great.
That'd be a lot.
That'd be fun.
How many beers do we get to have before that? That's how much fun it really is.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. It'll be great. They're gonna have a new video they did and some music, and I don't know if there'll be live entertainment, but they'll certainly be cranking some tunes and. Should be a lot of fun. I think it's like 6 to 9 on Thursday the 15th.
Great. Well, I'll be in Chicago, bummer. So.
Oh, well, we'll present
without you.
Yeah.
We'll just talk about you. That's all right. It's like we do that anyway. We even when you're there. So
I just want to mention.
Plus, we'll get your drink tickets.
Yeah, ooh, there you go. Better. Yeah. Yeah, Steve will be here any second. Can we have his drink tickets? I just want to just mention one quick thing, which was if you've not had an opportunity to do it yet, I did a post yesterday about the Walker Art Center's awesome new website, walkerart.org. You really owe it to yourself to go look at it. And one of the comments was in the post was from one of the developers who dinged him a little bit on the fact that the YouTube video didn't show up as HTML5. And so I had to jump out to the app on my iPad, and that was kind of a drag. But I got to tell you what, they have really set the bar for a virtual art organization. I mean, it's a magazine, it's a thought leadership, it's a horizon raising sort of online publication, and it's very impressive. So go take a look at that.
It's getting national renown. Wasn't it in the Atlantic or something? I saw that.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, it's being written up as a big deal. Yep. Not just here in town. I mean, it's being called one of the best out there.
Wow.
Nice.
All right. Well,
all right.
Thanks.
Have a great week.
You too, everybody. Thanks for listening. Julio, thank you for guest hosting again.
Yeah, no problem. Can I plug two things really, really quick?
Absolutely.
If you go to my tech blog, there's a post on a coffee making device called the AeroPress, which isn't new, but I recently discovered, and I've become a foaming at the mouth convert, and I just want to recommend it to everybody.
Okay.
The AeroPress, and this coming Sunday is the second in the three-part column series I'm doing on tech gifts for the holidays, and the angle on my column this Sunday is tech gifts that are made in Minnesota, and I really mean made in Minnesota, not a Minnesota company that manufactures its stuff in China or anything like that. Tech gifts that are 100% homegrown, you know, ranging from cases, you know, it just runs the gamut. But you know, check that out in the Pioneer Press on Sunday.
Nice,
that's great,
good.
Thanks, Julio. We'll see you guys next week, okay? On the Minovate Gang podcast.
Take care, everybody.
You guys,
bye.
Yep, bye.